pin a horse that you were after, wasn't there a reward if...
Somebody in Pendleton wanted that horse. He'd pay $1,000 if they could capture that horse and bring it into him on a halter.
And you got up to this camp and you put out your sleeping bags, were equivalent to your sleeping bags.
And I thought, the damn rock in there, under my sleeping bag. And I couldn't figure out why. But the rock kept getting smaller. And I had my damn sleeping bag on a snow bank. Snow in there. It stayed cold all night. But we got along pretty good. One time we got kind of a thrill. Of course, I had a 22 Colt Woodman pistol I carried, and all of us had guns. And we was riding out there. We just come to a band of sheep up there. Visited with the sheep herder for a while and gone a little ways. And my horse started acting funny. I was pretty well up in front of him. I couldn't figure out why. And she didn't want to go. And pretty soon she turned and started to run. And there's a goddamn bear across the trail there, and she was running right alongside of it, running far from the road, trying to get away from it. When I realized what was going on there, I took a shot at it. Well, it's a damn good thing I missed it. That bear could have hit me before I got back on my horse and got out of there. But we got up there, too much snow, and not enough horse feed. So we hunted and tried, and we never could. That damn stallion would. He would lead us astray. He knew the whole country, and he knew where he could take us, and we couldn't catch him and everything. And finally, we gave up, started back home. We got to Ruckel Road guard station, and dusk getting dark and snowy, and we was getting kind of a little short of horse feed. And so we broke in the damn place up there. And there was enough room we could all stay in there, but sleeping on the floor or any place that I could. Harold got the measles. He was pretty damn sick, and he got kind of screwed in his mind. He was jumping from the rafters and hanging on the rafters. He was damn lucky he got out of that, too. But the next morning, Fred and I and one of the Blockman boys and somebody else, I don't know which one it was, we rode out because we didn't have enough horse feed and stuff. They stayed another day. Then they was bringing that colt, and they was having trouble leaving that colt. It damn near had to drag it. It took them the biggest part of the day to ride out from Ruckel Road Ranger Station to home. But we had a lot of experience and stuff. But them damn wild horses ain't dumb. That stallion knew just exactly where to go and where to take us. No way in the world we could get close to even think about throwing a rope at him. He'd lead us out where we could get in trouble, and he knew how to stay out of it.
According to the book, you ended up with a little filly?
I didn't.
You didn't?
No. No, I bought a filly from Rennie Clark.
Oh. But it was quite an experience. You didn't go horse hunting after that,
no,
did you?
No, we went through it enough.
Did you have any other experiences as a young man?
You mean that I could talk about it?
Well, yes.
Not really. Them trips that was the reason I made after we was married. And so, but
did you notice during those early years when things were tough that people helped one another?
Oh, yeah.
That your entertainment was your friends?
Yeah.
Because you didn't have any money.
No. there was a neighbor kid there. We played together a lot. He overplayed with us, and he'd come over there about 10 o'clock, and he wanted to know if he could stay for dinner. Well, Mom never turned anybody down for dinner, you know. So I said, sure, she could stay for dinner. Well, we called up his folks and told him that he was going to stay for dinner for us. And so when dinner time come, my mom called us all into dinner, went in the table. She had a big pot of beans, cooked beans. Oh, he said, you have to eat beans all the time too. That was the times of stuff, you know. And we got beans a lot. And once in a while we'd get, well, more than once in a while, we'd have rice. So we'd get some fresh air.
Well, you also, didn't you have beef now and then from the dairy cows?
We sold them.
You sold
them.
You needed those to...
We needed them to pay the cash bills out.
Well, I can appreciate it.
Yeah. I never could figure out, well, why anybody would come to our place after 11 o'clock, never left without eating. And when they was, most of us were there together, they'd always had to serve two tables. The elder ones would get to eat, and then us other guys would sit around and wait until they got done, and then we'd get to eat. And if people came, and she had feed for them, they had first with the bigger guys, much of them. Mm-hmm. The other big guys had to wait for us. But she never had a... Never was out of feed. Everybody got to eat all they wanted. And if they didn't come, there was never any waste. How the heck Mom could cook for all of us and not waste a lot? Of course, we had leftovers, all right.
In the story there's a story about that you cleaned out a chicken house, a man paid you a dollar.
Yeah.
And can you tell me about that?
Yeah.
I thought it was great.
He was his own bachelor, and he had a... five chicken houses, 500 chickens in the house. There was a outfit up there that came around every two or three times a week and picked up the eggs. Then he made it for the money. He had five hens. I cleaned one a week. Every third one, I cleaned them. Took a team of horses and they had us an old slip, a little sled. I'd clean it, put it on there, take it out, scatter it in the field, and go out to the straw stack and get a load of straw to come back and put in there. And that would take me, I had to do a pretty good job of cleaning them. Then I had to keep them clean. I wanted a pair of bibless overalls to wear to school. And I told him I wanted a bibless. He had to go to town that Saturday while I was cleaning the chicken house and bought me a pair of bibless overalls. Well, I thought I was king. I had me a brand new pair of bibless overalls instead of hand-me-downs. And he never took the slip off of them, but he paid for them. And he paid 66 cents for that pair of overalls for me to ride it. So I didn't have to have an old bibless pair of overalls. I hated them damn bibless overalls. Or bib overalls.
I know where you're coming from.
Yeah.
When you said a slip was like a large scoop shovel, only it was big enough to be pulled by, behind a horse or two horses and scoop things out.
Yeah, we had to. That's not what I was using. I was using it as a shovel. And pitchfork to put it in that. There was a sled that was... Oh, about 6-8 feet wide and 10-12 feet long, pulled by the team. I did. I cleaned chicken houses quite a bit for that guy.
I learned about working.
Yeah. Worst one I ever had with him.
You had a little experience picking fruit and berries?
Oh, yeah. We used to go to Wenatchee Valley and pick apples in the fall and get lay off out of high school and go over there trying to make money. But that old guy, one night he was sick. And he called up and wanted to know if it was going well. I went over there and he had 12, 14 cows to milk. And the neighbor was supposed to come and help. And this guy was really sick. So he waited until after dark until him and I went out and milked them damn cows. And then it was way after dark. So I slept on the floor in front of the heater stove. And we've got to milk the cows again in the morning, and that old guy that was supposed to come, oh, he said it was too cold, he didn't want to fool around milking cows. Boy.
When you had cows, you couldn't make them wait. They had to be milked.
He had a old Model T Ford pickup. And I wanted that pickup awful damn bad. And I put in there worked enough for that guy that he was going to let me have it. And when he died, some supposed to be his relative come and got that pickup and said, let me have it. But I never forgot that. And, I was cleaning up. God damn, he had stuff all over his table. And I was cleaning that up, and I thought that kind of looked kind of funny. And picked up and looked at it, and there was a check for eggs. My God, he had $200 or $300 worth of checks of this land on the table he didn't even know he had.
Oh,
and I did. Well, I tell you, he took it off to town when he found that he had all them checks that he had in cash.
I appreciate that. What was the first car that you had, Roy?
Model T.
Model T? And where were you when you got it?
We was up in Washington.
That's before you moved down?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And I called it a glass house. It was CDAP, glass windows in it. And I paid $25 for that up there in Washington. Drove it down here. And when we were milking cows out to Clark's, all them 10-gallon cans of milk up to Blue Mountain Creamery. We built a platform on the back of that Model T. That's what we hauled the milk to town with. And that's what us kids went to school in. Took that milk to the creamery up there, and Tyler's. They went on to school, then come back and stopped and got our cans, took them back home again.
About how much were they paying for, was that milk or cream?
Milk, that was whole milk.
Whole milk.
Yeah, that's what he bottled.
Uh-huh. What were they paying for about that time?
Well, I wouldn't have any idea, but we'd buy milk for about a dime a quart.
Yeah. So it wasn't a whole lot?
No, it wasn't a whole lot. But you'd be surprised if you knew how many mortgages was paid on farms in this valley by eggs and milk. The eggs and milk would pay for the cost of farming, and anything they made off of the grains and stuff was what was called profit.
Well, one cow could support a family, and usually you could sell a few gallons aside.
Yeah.
On an average, I've forgotten how much does a cow get milk? Does a cow give?
Oh, some of them up to 2 gallons, 2.5. And the Jerseys was the richer stuff. They didn't give quite as much as the other ones. But
what kind did you usually run on the farm?
Jerseys, Guernseys, and Holsteins. Jerseys and Guernseys for the cream in it, and the Holsteins for the volume milk. And we had to mix that together. And that's why we did it when we were bottling milk, too. If you bottled Great Jersey milk, we'd have about that much milk and the rest of the bottle of quartz cream. So you got to mix that to keep it about that much cream on top of the bottle.
When you delivered the milk to the house and it was real cold sometimes, it'd freeze and raise up about 3 or 4 inches.
About an inch to an inch and a half, anyway.
Inch to an inch and a half. Well, I stretched it a little bit.
Yeah, Mrs. Rasmussen. Yeah. Phil and Rasmussen. Mm-hmm. And delivered milk to them. And it was cold. I put it on the porch and she went out to get the milk and the chap was up an inch off. She called old Killen back. He was a milk inspector, weight inspector, all that stuff. And told him about it. And he said, well, that's natural. It just froze and it pushed the cream on top of the milk, so I shoved it up. Put it in where it's warm and it'll settle back down. And Mrs. Rasmus thought I was, I don't know what the hell she thought I was doing.
I don't have to know.
Yeah.
Did you have the tall, slim bottles, or did you ever have any of those with the bubble in the...
Yeah, I had some of them too, yeah.
And you used to call that poor man's cream that come off there?
Oh, one of the doctors. Old Brown, he wasn't a doctor, he was a dentist.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. He bought milk from us. He wanted the cream separate and pop it, like you say, skim it off the top of milk. And the second or third time I delivered that to him, he told me, he said, that's top milk, that ain't cream. I want some that you've got to scoop out of the jar. We had a hell of a time, man. We had to get a separator so we could separate.
Yeah.
And then he wanted that stuff when it got cold, well, you could turn it up and it wouldn't run out. You'd have to scoop it out with a spoon or a knife. But that cost money to do that, too.
True. Then you didn't have a separator.
Didn't for a long time.
Long
we
time.
Did it by mixing Great Jerseys and Holsteins and stuff. They arrested me one time for having too much cream in the bottle. And they got they was going to take me to Portland.
There were regulations on how much
cream in there. And we had a hell of a time. I told them I couldn't go to Portland. I had to stay there and milk them cows. And they said, well, you're getting too much milk. Hotel Buck, or whoever took the test, checked and took the one that the cream line was the furthest down into the whole damn bunch. And this one quart had too much. People didn't care. They liked it. But we had to be damned awful careful.
Well, I can appreciate it. Rules and regulations. Hot water. When you did get that separator, wasn't it a bear to clean all
those? Oh, God darn you. I didn't like that job. Nobody else did either. Somebody had to do it. Mom did it most of the time. You'd have to take that bowl apart, take each one of them pieces. You're supposed to put them back in the same basic rotation that was in them.
When you got the separator started, you had to start turning that handle and it just got to humming.
Yeah.
And then turn the milk in there. It was a lot of work.
Yeah.
It was nothing easy.
Well, it was nothing too darn hard, but it was just something doing all the time.
Yeah.
Like I said, that 5 years of my wife, Ryan, neither one of them was home overnight. That's why I sold the dairy.
Did you raise most of your hay, or did you have to buy some?
I had to buy some. When I got here, I could do pretty good. But I raised hay and bought grain, because I got the kind of hay I wanted when I did that. Yeah. I did very seldom that I had, enough I had to buy hay.
Well, actually, the hay of this part of the country is quite good.
Yeah.
It's better than that that comes from the valley. The valley usually buys our hay.
Yeah. One thing about it here, when you raise your own, you didn't let it get too far in bloom. It makes more hay, but it hasn't got the feed value for a milk cow in it. And they waste too much of stem then. If a beef cow would eat it, but a milk cow can't produce if they do. So if you raise your own hay and buy your grain, they can't change the grain.
No.
Oh, there's lots of tricks to it. But the one thing that I was awful mean about was milking at 4 o'clock in the morning and 4 o'clock in the afternoon. If we was harvesting hay or anything else, by God, everything quit when milking time come.
I can appreciate it.
And they did too, the cows did. We did
better
that
days.
Way. Yeah. And we finally got a radio in the barn out there. And play that radio and get KLBS on the radio. And if somebody, a stranger, comes in, well, they never bothered the cows any, but a stranger come in and got too loud and stuff, that made the cows nervous. We didn't get as much milk and had more cleaning job afterwards.
When you had a radio, did that make a difference in the amount of milk that the cows gave?
Yep, it did. There was never, they never got excited about anything. Other
well,
people come in and...
I've heard that, but I didn't know.
Yeah, it did. It did.
Being factual.
It's kind of soothed them or something. That and putting a pan of grain in front of them each time.
Did you raise anything else in the...
Oh.
Besides cows on the...
Yeah. In the garden. Potatoes.
Chickens.
Chickens. My dad used to like to raise raspberries and strawberries.
Uh-huh.
Too, and he had a big garden still. But it, with that many kids, everybody doing something.
You ever have any hogs? Or?
Yes, we did. And I was slopping the hogs one time. We had a trough over the fence. And I reached over with a bucket full of milk and sour milk and grain mixed up and stuff in here.
Yes.
I leaned over too far when I dumped the bucket and I fell right in the damn trough. And that, you know, I can understand why the hogs made so much noise when they had it. Didn't take very long. And I had to go out, change all my clothes and everything else. When they get done laughing away. But we did a lot of that slopping hogs and stuff. We raised them.
Did you smoke your own hams or did...
Yes. We had a big smokehouse. Dad liked to fish. We had a creek running through the place and we'd get salmon off when they'd run up the creek and we'd get them with spit horse or anything we could. And we had smoked salmon most of the time. Very damn small time when that smokehouse wasn't busy.
Uh-huh.
We, if we had any oats, grain, we put it in the barn in the bin. And lots of times, in the wintertime, Mom would say, Roy, go down there to the oat bin and get us a ham. We put a ham in that oats to keep it.
Keep it in.
Bugs shouldn't get to it and uh-huh. Never spoil or nothing.
Yeah.
Good smoked ham. I remember the real good old days.
Well, when you came to LeGrand as a senior and the high school was burned, what were some of the things that happened when you...
You remember a school teacher up there that was cross-eyed. Cross, I think, was her name, or what they called her. She was our homeroom teacher.
Uh-huh.
And we had a lot of fun with her. She would be looking right at you and see somebody doing something way over there once. But she was a good teacher. And we used to play tricks on her, too. I didn't have too much trouble. The only thing is I take advantage of every chance I got. Old J.H. Blunt was a history teacher. And he always gave us tests, and it was always true or false. And I found out after a while that if I'd answer every one of them that I knew was true, and then just false ones, and the other way around, I knew the false ones, I'd mark them and everything else I marked as true, and I was running better than 80, 85 average on the test, and he thought I was pretty smart, you know. Well, the last final exam that we took over there, and we had it down in the city building, the office building, went down there and upstairs into that. And of course, he'd teach several classes. And when I went down there and sat down in my desk, why, here was when the numbers sit down there. And that's something clicked. And I marked them ones wrong. And I got 100. And after school was over, I got a letter from old J.H. Blunt complimenting on me on getting 100 on that exam. So, we learned how to use all angles, you know. Okay. Hell, I didn't know who that kid was who was there before, but there was fresh markings on there, two or four. No, that was a kind of a... I didn't fit in with the guys. It took a long time before, but when they started playing baseball, sports got mixed up in the white and we were right amongst them all the time.
Yeah. Well, you had to go all over town to go to school, didn't you?
Yeah, I went to police station, the Mormon church, the Methodist church, and I don't know where we had all the mechanics. I was in that, too. But they had that little shop up there someplace.
Uh-huh.
I got along pretty good in that auto mechanics, too. We set the valves in one of them, ground the valves, then set valves. And some of them set them all in. Well, I'm moving the motor. I'm rolling it over one way or the other. They adjusted all the valves. This was setting cold. Of course, it didn't run worth a damn. And Max something, I think, was it, math teacher. He said to me, he said, "Yours ran." And I said, "Yeah." I said, "Sometimes I had a heck of a time figuring out just how far to turn it to get the valve where I wanted it." He said, "That's why yours runs so much better than everybody."
It would make a difference. Did you work on your own car?
No, they had a car up there. They had one up there that they used it for everybody.
This Model T that you bought and drove down here, how long did you have that?
Oh, I wish I had it now. Before Fred and them got through school, but they didn't have to drive to school very often on that. But we had an old touring car up there in Washington with some isinglass windows. That's when I started driving. And I drove that Model T most of the way down here. Did most of the driving that sedan. I had a box on the side. We had a Labrador dog, pet dog. We'd be on the box on the head, set on the fender. And we stopped over there. We'd come down off the horse heaven on the flat down the bottom. And we stopped there to say our prayers because we made it that far. Stuff. And we turned the old dog out for some exercise. We always did that. God damn, he took off after a jackrabbit. And the last we seen him was way up on a damn hill, way out of hearing aid range, you know. Well, we all, most of us weeping a little bit, we were going to lose our dog. We stayed there, and by golly, he turned around and tracked himself back. We seen him coming. We knew which way he ran, and my guy, pretty soon here he was coming back. He never caught the rabbit, but I think he learned something. And we were sure happy. And that's old dog, my nephew. We had cherry trees. My nephew, when the cherries was ripe, he'd go out there and eat some cherries. He'd pick one, he'd give one to the dog and one to himself and one to the dog. And he'd put his hand on the dog's head and said, spit the seeds out, spit the seeds out. And that mom would give him a sandwich. And he'd go sit down on the porch. That dog would come up and he'd take a bite out of the sandwich. Hold it out and that dog would take a little bite off the sandwich. They'd eat that sandwich right down. The dog never took a big bite of that, any of them sandwiches. He always shared them this way. He was a good dog. Of course, that wasn't the healthiest thing in the world, but then nobody suffered for it. Anyway, don't even sound like it'd be good for me now. There's one thing way back in the, should have told you a long time ago, but I never thought of it. They were working for a neighbor. He was building a chicken house. And we had to mix cement. We had to haul water. Wells up there. If you dug the well too deep, well, you get salt water. From the northwest corner of Washington, where we did. And so we had to take the truck, old truck and some cans, and go up to the creek to get water to mix the cement. And the guy's son, he was 3 or 4 or 5 years older than I was. We went up there, and of course he was driving the truck, I was. And he backed down in the creek. And we filled the buckets of water and stuff, and it was sloping too much. And when we got ready to drive out, the gas wouldn't feed it. So, what do you do? Well, he took the cap off the gas tank, and he'd take a big breath and blow on that gas tank, put his hand over and get another breath. He did that several times, and then he passed out and he fell off over that. And I seen him fall down. I went around there, and God damn it, he was laying there with his mouth in about that much water. His whole face was in that much water. And I grabbed him and drug him out of there. And he's never forgot. Last time I seen him, he said, "You pulled me out." I said, "If I'd known you as well as I do now, I'd have probably shot." But that saved that kid's life. If I hadn't just seen that and had sense enough to roll his damn face out of that water. But
what is that saying, right? That the good Lord takes care of damn fools and kids?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Did you ever fish on Catherine Creek over there when the salmon were running?
No, I never did.
Never did.
I seen them over there, but I never.
On the Davis cattle ranch?
Yeah. At the, that where the barn was, where the people, the guys hide in the barn until the cops wasn't around, and then they'd go out to just throw that little dam he had in there.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, there's been a lot of changes in this valley, some good, some bad, but it's still a great place to live.
I've running around, I never found a place I'd rather live.
Yep.
And then always the Wildland Islands or any of them islands up in Alaska, I just got no idea of wanting to live up there.
It's always nice to come home.
Yeah.
When you see Mount Emily, that...
Yeah. You got all kinds of weather. So it'll be that way, it'll be like it is some places, damn hot in the summertime and it's cold in the wintertime. I got no desire to go. Last time I took Marie and I went to California. I guess her great granddaughter got married and we went down to that. I told her, take a good look while you're here because I'm never coming back here again. God. Darn 5 and 6 lanes of highway cars going by in both directions. They get signs down there then when we was down there at 65. And they get out in the country where they could drive, they'd drive 65. Before they get back into town, they'd be driving 80.
Yeah.
You know, all that traffic and going like a bunch of damned idiots. And, boy, I'll never drive another car down there. No way.
Well, you bought a number of Fords.
Oh, I've been a Ford man all my life, ever since I had that first Model T that I learned to drive. I learned the hard way that it don't stop when you say, whoa, either. I never wrecked anything or hurt anything, but I sure learned a lesson quick.
Well, I went to work for Claude Hand in 55. Hmm. You always come in and talk to George?
Yeah. You got a kick out of old George. I bought him. I always bought from George. And I'd go in there and George just said, I need a cup of coffee. And he knew what I had in mind. And we got in quite an argument one time over on the Ford pickup. He just wouldn't budge at all. I had a friend that was living in Spokane, and I told him I was going to buy a new pickup, Creamer. And so I told him that's exactly what I wanted. I wanted a big six in there, and an interlocking rear end where one wheel slipped away there. I didn't want to get the power. And George had one up there that he'd sell me, $2,700. And that one from Spokane said, cash, no trade-in? I said, yeah. $2,000, $700 different. I said, I can walk to Spokane for that much money. He wouldn't have it, nothing. George just absolutely wouldn't. So we was walking out, and Claude was there, and he seen us going out, and he said, wait a minute. He said, neither one of you look happy. I said, no. I said, I wanted to buy a pickup. I can buy it cheaper someplace else, but I don't want to have to get it that way. He said, come in and sit down. So I went in his office and sat down. George stayed in the door. We got to talking. Claude says, what's the matter? Well, I said, things just tough all over. And I can buy that truck that's exactly like I wrote him what I had, what was mine on it, what I told him about that. And I said, George wants $2,800, and I said, my gosh, I can't afford that. Well, he said, it's a cash deal. I always borrowed money from the bank and paid cash for it, because I could pay it off when I wanted to that way. And he said, let me make a phone call. So he called someplace in Boise, and they talked. He repeated what I said I wanted to them. Pretty soon he looked up at me. He said, what color do you want? I said, I don't give a damn what color it is. As long as it runs, that's what I'm after. I can have a red one here day after tomorrow for $2,100. I said, order it. And after that, I never had any trouble with George or anything. I'd go there and tell George I needed a cup of coffee. We argued for Ford and I, and I wanted to talk about renting it, and he said, you can't afford it. Claude did. He said, if you rent it in 2 years' time, you can buy it. But it'll cost you more than if you owned it. He said, it costs you $1,500 a year to own it. So whenever I wanted to trade with him, I'd just figure how much a year. By God, I'd go in there and tell old George and damn say he wouldn't beat it. $500 more than I think I'd get each time by working with George. I'd tell him, well, damn it, you'd make me mad. Well, I made you mad. I'd give you a better deal than you expected. And I said, yeah, but I didn't get to Jew any. So that, him and I got along fine.
What do you think about the price of cars now? You buy one then for $2,700 and now, what, $30,000?
Yeah, right.
The prices have gone completely through the roof.
Yeah. I can't leave these advertisements in the paper. Some of the advertisements they do on them cars, if I bought a new car, I wouldn't drive it like they drive them. The last thing I'd ever do with them. No interest, no payment for a year, and all that crap. Somebody's paying the bill. I don't know, when I was driving my cream route, I put it on 90,000 in 2 years.
I imagine, by gosh, that's a lot of driving.
I sold one of 92,000 I had on it, and I traded it in. A guy out here in the valley, I can't think of his name now, called me up. He said, what all did you do to that truck? I said, put gas and oil in it and greased the surfaces when I was supposed to. Never had it overhauled? I said, no, I don't answer that. It's for her and I just...
Now, you said he was a farmer out in the valley?
Yeah. If I hadn't had it overhauled, it, well, he wanted it. And I said, no, I never overhauled it. He said, I kept it serviced and took care of it all the time. Never beat it up all the bed to pick up where I set a 5 gallon can down sometimes. But they weren't beat up at all. And he bought it just under about 95,000 is what they had on. And I talked to him about 2 or 3 years after that, and he said I drove that thing till it had 195,000 on it. And I went into Ford to trade it in for a new one, on a new one, and they wouldn't trade it. I said they wouldn't trade me, they wouldn't give me anything traded. So he went up to Enterprise and traded it up there, and he got quite a bit of money for that damn old pickup. But he put that much on it, and he wouldn't have touched it. If I'd had it overhauled, he wouldn't have touched it. And he's a big farmer out here in the valley now.
Well, it's interesting about how cars have changed and stuff over the years.
Yeah.
So expensive.
I bought one Ford from pickup for them up there. I like to take it out and drive it before I put it on the cream route. So my wife and I took it. We went up the toll gate. I thought, hell, it was early enough in the day, so we drove it on to Pendleton and come home that way. I wanted to get out. We got out of it here. I was going to ready to take it on the cream route the next day. God damn it. Seat didn't look right. They put that seat cushions all in there and never put a bolt in it. It wasn't bolted to the frame at all. Nothing. Just sitting in there. Well, that's dangerous. And I drove it all the way to Pendleton back and sat there and there was no problem. Because when I'm getting in and out of it all the time, you're like, you're all cream. That thing just sitting in there. Well, got down to Ford and I said, you can have the damn thing. What do you mean? I said, I took it for a ride. And I said, when I got out, the seat was loose. There wasn't a bolt in it. Oh, God. Oh, God, he just had a fit. Boy, I tell you, there was some action around there. Next morning, it was ready to go, but I went. I took the old truck again.
Well, the factory, you know, once in a while, something comes messed up.
Yeah.
And it should be picked up in the pre-delivery.
Yeah.
You know,
one guy worked on the line in the rig, and he said, he was putting some bolts and something someplace. When it went by him, he put them bolts in that time he had in space they were supposed to go into. He said, once in a while, if I get behind, he said, I just throw a handful of bolts in and let it go.
Strange things happen.
Yeah. Oh, God, lucky. Hellfire, some of the things I did, I was damn lucky. But
well, it sounds like it's been a good life, Roy. Enjoyed yourself as you went along. Been married to two nice ladies.
Been lucky that way. I'll tell you one more thing that we did as kids. We lived within a little over a mile of a Grange Hall. They used to have dances all the time there. There's gravel road went by it. Finally, we got smart. I don't know who in the hell thought of it to start with. But we'd go out there along the gravel road and get a handful of that light gravel and broadcast it along the edge of by the fence post along the edge. Pretty soon we'd hear a tingle on glass. We'd go up there and we got more homebrew and whiskey, bottles of whiskey from the fence post we got. Set his whiskey bottle down or by the post there so he knew where it was at, you know. And if we'd hear a tingle on glass, we knew that. Some of the kids got pretty drunk, but I never drank it that much, but I traded it. But I got a kick out of that. And I walked by, I don't know how many bottles of whiskey we all have ever walked by before we got smart enough to throw tingling glass in there. Some people was unhappy, and they all thought some of the mother guys, the big guys, did it. You
know? Well, there's a lot of stories about prohibition.
Yeah. Well, when I moved here and bought this place, Fred Hill, but that's not. He lives over there back of Walmart. He lived over back of where Walmart is, where that church is over there now. He's quite an old guy. He told me that Saturday afternoon, late, he used to like to go over to the corner of my place where that creek was, the brush out along that creek. And look under there, and he knew about where to look, and he always found a moonshiner, but guy'd give him $5 or whatever for a bottle hid in that brush out there. And then, of course, he'd go get it. He'd put it out there Saturday afternoon, he'd go get it Saturday evening when he'd go in the house. And he said, I got more than my share.
When you first moved out here, wasn't there quite a little bit of water or was that farther on that they've drained from the early days?
Well, that must be when they changed the river. I've been here, when the river flooded and washed that house up town and they hit the railroad bridge down here and knocked things all to pieces.
Loveless's house?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When the drop of rain come or the water run down here, this was dry just like it is now, all the way from Island City this way.
Uh-huh. Well, there used to be those ponds up there by where Quinlan's live.
Yeah.
In there. That's all dry now.
Yeah. I never seen any water extra running down Quinlan's here in the bottom here, mm-hmm. through the golf course. But, boy, uptown, and I... When that cream station there in the Grand on Jefferson, and the back end of that cream station There was quite a hole in there. And right next to the railroad track.
Yeah.
And I went uptown and I couldn't get through the underpass. It was full of water. I had to go back around the other way. I thought that the back end of that thing would be floating, and you know there wasn't a damn drop extra in that creek there. That was dry as a bone.
Okay.
Hold on. Don Lemon, run Globe Furniture. He had furniture and stuff parked in down below in under my building and under the other one. That was his storage. And they was pumping water. They had a pumper running over there at Miller's on that side of Jefferson, running for trying to keep it out of their shores there. And that over there was dry. Old John was afraid to come over there.
Yeah.
He knew it was just going to be full of water. But it wasn't going to be stayed dry. Why now? I don't know. They got a good dam up there someplace that kept that river there.
Well, that tin sewer used to go down the alley there between Adams and Jefferson. And that helped fill a lot of basements.
Yeah. Yeah, I sat there and watched that damn pump run there in front of Miller's, there pumping water, when that water was high over there.
Well, that was that flood of 64, 65.
Yeah. That's the only time I ever seen the river humped up in the middle. Now that actually was, it was rounded. The top of the water was rounded. There's a darn much water coming down there. That's when they took out the railroad bridge and stuff. And what I'll never forget was driving from here to Cove on the Cove Road. Claude Anson had an old clean track cat sitting out there in the field, out there on top of the sand ridge out there, fairway. There's about that much of the top of the exhaust pipe sticking out of the water. That whole cat was underwater except that much.
About 2 inches.
2 inches of it.
I'll be darned.
Boy, they were sat there for quite a while. Boy, they had to take every bolt out of that damn thing and put it back together, clean it up.
Yeah.
Put it back together. They earned it.
True.
And a lot of people talk about it, laugh about that. Claude left his tractor set out there when it should have been in the home in the shed.
Well, that happened a lot down the valley.
Yeah.
Leave the equipment out there. And well, I was interested about you telling me you'd worked for Willie because I wasn't aware of that. Willie's been a friend of mine for a lot of years.
Yeah. Everybody told me that you'll never make it out there. I'm 10 years younger than he is. He said, you got too many ideas of your own. Yeah. I worked out there for him. One time I went out there in the wintertime. I was working 1 or 2 feeding the cows. Snowed about 4 inches that night. And we hoisted all the hay on the trailer that he had there. Nobody was out to the shed yet when I got there. So I figured we were going to haul some hay and feed the cattle on it. So I took a scoop shovel out and shoveled that snow off in the trailer. And when he got out there, we didn't use that trailer. That's the only time that he ever... I did something for him before I was told. So I seen the message right there, boy. I do what you tell me to. And I got along fine, and I finally got so, I hate to say this about Willie, God damn it, when he worked on a piece of equipment in the shop or out in the lot, he just tore his damn wrenches down. When I got there and he'd worked on a piece of equipment, I picked up the goddamn wrenches and took over the desk and wiped the grease and muck off and put them in the drawer. And the only thing he ever said about that was, it took me a little while to learn what you was doing. Picking up his tools and putting them away when he got done with them. And we got along fine. That's the only damn time. He never said anything, but I knew when I did them. When he's seen that I've shoveled that snow without being told to.
Well, he's a hard worker, right?
Yeah.
I like Willie.
Yeah, I always did too. But another thing, he never bought any equipment he didn't have money to pay for.
Yep.
He thought he bought that beach place one time from old Claude Hanson. Claude. Right. And he borrowed the money. He not borrowed it. He went and drawed the money out so he could pay old Claude cash for it. And I don't know what come up, but anyway, somebody talked Claude out of it, selling it. Some of his kids or some damn thing, they wanted it. And so he told Willie. Well, Willie had $100,000+ in cash there. Went up to the First National Bank, he banked there, and he went up and they told the guy that. It was on Saturday. No, he called the guy, and he was on Saturday. And he said, I'll meet you up there right away. So Willie took the money up there. He said, if you want me to, I can have more money than this back for you Monday or Tuesday. What do you mean? Well, he said, always somebody calls up and they have to have some immediately. He said, I can loan that to them at a pretty good interest. And I won't charge you near what interest they pay me. And so, like I'm willing to let them do it. He made $50,000 over that weekend on that quick money loan. The guys at the bank business had to have it.
Yeah.
And they did that. I said, why didn't you leave him have it all the time? He said, I don't trust him that much. Yeah, I'll expect I better let you shut that off.
Well.